welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, and you're joining us for the last episode of this year. And I'm being joined by Savannah. Savannah, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Anton, and I'm very happy to be back.
Unfortunately, Sam is not joining us this time, but Sam will be with us in spirit, and I'm sure we'll be talking about you, Sam, because there's a lot of scores to be talked about, and it's gonna be a tight one there at the top in Forecast.
Yeah, I think it is.
But I guess the best would be to first start talking a little bit about the highlights of the weekend. And since, Savannah, you're now also writing and speaking summaries for Forecast F1, both written on the website and spoken voice notes in the WhatsApp groups. So I guess you're best qualified to tell us a little bit about what went on in the practice sessions and qualifying and race. And I can just, you know, sit back a little bit and listen to a summary.
Alrighty. Well, this weekend I think was a very action-packed weekend, as well as an emotional one. I'm sure you can agree with me on that. So, yeah, as we all knew, that Constructors' Championship was up for grabs, and the switches from teams and drivers to different teams, it was a bit of a handful. But in the FP1 session at the Yas Marina Circuit, we did get to see quite a bit of action, with Charles Leclerc having his younger brother Arthur Leclerc on the track with him, which was, I think, a really, really cool thing to be witnessing in this day and age. And yeah, I think once Charles got his battery up and running, he went on quite a few flying laps. So it was really, really awesome to see that in FP1. Other than that, we saw Max Verstappen, Carlos Sainz, Piastri, Stroll, Tsunoda, Albon, also coming back behind the wheel in FP2 as the rookies, the six other rookies, were in the cockpits for the FP1 practice session. And from that, in FP2, we had the results and summary after Leclerc topped the charts in FP1, where Norris once again took the top step, followed by his very big rival in the same sort of car as what he's got, Piastri. And then, surprisingly, Hülkenberg popped up on the scene. And closing out the top 10 were Sainz, Hamilton, Leclerc, Bottas, Magnussen, Albon, and Tsunoda. And it was good to see them back in their seats one last time in the practice sessions, especially with the sunset backdrop that we saw of Abu Dhabi, which was really, really cool. And I think it was a good surprise to see Hülkenberg and the Haas up in third.
Exactly. And you mentioned the two Leclerc brothers, but they didn't share that much track time, because there seemed to be an issue with car of Leclerc. And that also later resulted in a penalty. So Leclerc would start 10 places back and wouldn't have a very good qualifying session either. But we'll get into that for a little bit. Yeah. So the other drivers that were stand-ins, I think we've seen it also in the past season, with the new rule of the teams having to have a rookie in a car, in each car, at least once a year. Abu Dhabi is a pretty logical one to set them up for. So we had Ryo Hirakawa in the McLaren. We had Isaac Hadjar, who drove in Verstappen's car in the Red Bull. And then we had Felipe Drugovic, who's been taking most of those Aston Martin rookie sessions. And Ayumu Iwasa at VCarp, as well as Luke Browning for Williams.
So
interesting to see a couple of new faces, or a couple of faces that we've seen already. I guess technically Jack Doohan also counts as a rookie driver, and so Alpine was able to fill that seat up with him, not only for the qualifying the race, but also for the rookie session. But you mentioned there Hülkenberg performing very well. It was interesting to see also before, because that was still in FP2, so ahead of our predictions. And a lot of people speculating how high they would put them up. And how high did you put Nico in your predictions?
In my predictions, Nico was actually spot on, so I was very happy. I did have Magnussen right behind him, and obviously we saw Magnussen take the fastest lap, which we'll get into a little bit later. And Yeah, it would have been lovely to see the pair of them both up in the top 10, but unfortunately it didn't pan out that way. But nonetheless, they both featured in some form of points, even though the fastest lap didn't count.
Right, yeah, that was the other battle. You mentioned already McLaren and Ferrari, but of course the Alpine Haas battle has been an interesting one to follow also in recent weeks. So perhaps let's talk a little bit about the qualifying session. I think that it was interesting to see a couple of things that we saw in Q1, and I'm doubting now whether to start about the deleted lap times and later reinstated lap times. Mostly that of Perez, or talk about about the Hamilton bollard that he picked up. That was a little bit of Mario Kart driving from Kevin Magnussen. Which one do we start on?
Well, I think let's start with Hamilton, because I think it was a bit of a bummer due to that the fact that it was his last weekend at Mercedes, and I think it put a little bit of a dampener for him going into the actual race today, and obviously he pulled a rabbit out of the hat and slotted it quite high in the points. So, yeah, I think the bollard incident with Hamilton, it was, of course, unseen due to the fact that Magnussen got it out from where it was actually positioned and under Hamilton's car. Hamilton didn't have time or enough time to react to moving out the way and jeopardizing his qualifying lap.
Yeah, it looked a little bit clumsy and a little bit, it looked very unfortunate. On the other hand, I guess one part of the story is also that the banker lap that Lewis said was just not good enough to set him up for going into Q2. Who did go into Q2, I just mentioned him already, but that was very, very tight with track limits of Perez, which initially his lap was deleted and then later reinstated. I've seen the pictures afterwards because, of course, his track limits would be compared to that of some of the other drivers. I think mostly the one of Leclerc in Q2. And there was definitely a difference. I mean, in Q2, you could see that Leclerc was definitely outside of track limits. But if I'm being really honest, I couldn't see Perez being on the line, because technically you need to be on the white line with one of the, well, with the part of the tire that actually touches the track, so not with the outside tire hovering over it, but you actually need to touch it. And to be really honest, on the images I couldn't really spot it.
Yeah, I agree with you there 100%, Anton. When I got the chance to actually superimpose the penalty that was given to Leclerc on that same corner with Perez, it almost seemed to be that the cars were lining up exactly. So again, we've been speaking about consistency in the last few weeks from the FIA handing out penalties and following certain regulations, where one penalty is given to a driver like Leclerc was given at the 10th place grid penalty. I personally feel that Perez should have had the same output in terms of penalization from the FIA.
Yeah, but the 10 grid penalty was for replacing the electronic units.
Yeah, but I think from those exceeded track limits, something such as that fine line working towards that in a lap time deletion, I would personally say, to make it even more interesting for next year if I was on the FIA, that the replacement of any technical part such as the battery and things of lap time deletions, penalty points might be needed to come into play, because we did see one or two points in the entire season where certain turns became very messy. And obviously want the teams to run a tight ship, as if they don't do already, it might be a little bit more of an incentive for the drivers to be more aware of that racing limit that they're allowed to use.
Yeah, well, I think what surprises me a lot is that we're still looking at images from, I mean, the angle of the images was pretty good this time, I would say, but still, they're pictures from pretty far away. I don't understand that in a sport like this, we cannot just work with exact images or with a electronic way of monitoring whether somebody goes over track limits. If I compare the two between Leclerc and Perez, I do see a difference. Leclerc is further away from the white line. So there is a difference between the two of them. But I would say both of them are out of the out of track limits. Then the second thing I would like to talk about, and you just mentioned consistency there of the FIA. I've looked again and again at the situation of Russell blocking Lawson there at the very end of that Q1 session, and I just can't wrap my head around it, because of course we've seen what we've seen last weekend in Qatar, where Verstappen got a one place grid drop for basically blocking Russell when they were both on outlaps, both basically nestling in their place for setting their next flyer lap, where Russell is basically just trying to jump the gap that Verstappen is creating between himself and Alonso. Now, I thought that that was a very unfair penalty, but I guess we've all accepted it and moved on. But now you got in the Q1 session here at Abu Dhabi the situation where basically there's an Aston Martin going slow, and Russell decides to jump that Aston Martin, which he shouldn't do, because first of all, that Aston Martin is trying to create a gap for itself as well. He's ruining that on the last turn, which he shouldn't do. And then second of all, by overtaking that Aston Martin, he goes on the racing line and blocks the racing line for Lawson, who's just getting to that last corner to finalize his flying lap. And I've also heard people say that, yeah, but Lawson still qualifies himself for Q2. But it's very well established with the FIA that we should penalize actions and not outcomes. So the outcome of Lawson still being able to go into Q2, that's all nice and everything. But the action of George Russell blocking him on the racing line, yeah, to me, it's quite outrageous to not see a penalty for this. And later after the session, I guess we'll continue to talk about Q2 and Q3, where we had Hülkenberg qualify on the second row of the grid. He received a grid penalty for a technicality, which is fine by me. I do agree we need to live by the rules, but I just find it very inconsistent that Verstappen gets a penalty, Hülkenberg gets a penalty, and Russell doesn't get one. I'm the last person to be starting to talk about conspiracy theories and everything. But all I would like to say is that they're definitely hinting in a direction of some drivers being, I don't know, judged in a different way than some others. It's just, they're not trying to hide it very well. Let's just say that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that incident with Lawson and Russell we're speaking about now, we heard Russell on the radio say that he got as much out of the way as he could before he was off track, which granted, we did see him try to move out the way. But regardless, if you're not on a flying lap and you know others might be, why would you trying to be jeopardizing the racing line that the majority of drivers on a flying lap would?
Yeah, so he did get out of the way, but he just wasn't supposed to be there at all. Because if you go far enough back, you see that actually he's behind the Aston Martin. He's overtaking the Aston Martin. By overtaking the Aston Martin, he sort of has to go on the racing line. Although he even could have done that besides the racing line, I feel, because the Aston Martin was completely, it was on the right side of the track. There was still a lot of space between the Aston Martin and the racing line. He could have been in the middle, but he didn't. He overtook that car, and by doing so, he's blocking him. And yeah, then he tries to move out of the way, but he shouldn't have been there in the first place. So it's not really an excuse. 100%
agree. 100% agree. I think for Lawson, I think many people agreed with his reaction to what was Russell doing there in the first place, like we keep saying. Regardless, his lap still got him into Q2, which was fantastic. But, I mean, Russell was in the wrong, blatantly. And in the recent beef or conflicts that we've seen with him and Max Verstappen from Qatar, you would think Russell would be more conscious of the rules that he keeps preaching, and then also practicing what he's preaching, along with the other 19 drivers that also have to abide by those same rules. Because I don't think that if Russell was on a flying lap or the roles were reversed between Lawson and Russell, that Lawson would have been possibly in that position, even though he's still a rookie. I'm sure he's well aware of that sort of incident possibly causing a penalty from the officials.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. On a more positive note, it was Bottas who went through in that Q1 session on a P2. Yep. That was something.
Yeah, he I think pulled a brilliant flying lap in that session. So hats off to him. And I mean, he currently doesn't have a seat for next year, but we can clearly see what he can do with practically the worst car out of the entire Constructors' Championship. So, I mean,
yeah, I think it's safe
he's
to
definitely
say that.
Got potential.
No, definitely. and not only in Q1, also in Q2, I think he went through on a P9. And actually, talking about that Q2, and we already mentioned him before, but Perez was extremely lucky there, actually, with Leclerc's time being deleted, because it was Perez making it through on a P10. He would have been out if that track time of Leclerc wouldn't have been deleted. So, lucky boy there again. He wouldn't be as lucky in the race, but we'll get to that first. I guess we got to mention who took a pole position in the qualifying session. So what did you make of the Q1 or the Q3 session?
So Q3 session, I won't lie, I was a little bit down due to the fact that we had already lost Hamilton in Q1, and when Leclerc got his grid penalty, he was also no longer in the mix. So yeah, I mean, I was still happy that Sainz went through due to the fact that I am a diehard Tifosi fan. I think it wasn't a big surprise that Norris took pole and then Piastri right behind him. And obviously chasing the constructors, Sainz was giving it his all from that moment onwards for Ferrari.
And what did you make of that Verstappen lap where he lost it on his first banker lap, and he just with his right front tire managed to stay within the it's his right front tire, which he just managed to stay within track limits and actually set the fastest lap of all the first flying laps. I thought he was gonna lose it there and just go right into the barrier by, you know, trying to keep that wheel into the track limits, and by doing so having a huge swing to the side of the car and then going towards the other barrier on the other side of the track. I thought he was going to lose it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have to come to the realization that the 20 people that we have watched for 24 races or 24 weekends of this year are still human, and there is something as overcompensation and a lot of other technical engineering aspects that go along with it. But obviously they've been trained under certain conditions to react the ways that they do. And yeah, I mean, when I saw it happen, I was like, well, there goes Verstappen headfirst into a barrier on the last weekend. That's exactly what we need, especially with Perez performing the way that he has been for Red Bull. So I was very happy that he managed to get the car back under control. And then when he did the swerve back towards the pit wall, it was again, like, in the instance, I sat there and I went, what is this man doing? And then the fastest lap was set by him, and I said, he knows what he's doing. So, I mean, you can't fault him, like Norris has mentioned, when he won the championship earlier.
Actually, another note that I made during the qualifying session of Q3 was that when Piastri's time was initially deleted, I wrote down here in my notebook that that I don't see any difference to the time being deleted of Perez, and the image of Perez and Piastri were identical. And then later on, his lap would be reinstated as well. I think that was at the time a P3 lap. But in the end, it would be... It would be a nice, it would be nice given to have had the Ferraris, of course, especially talking about Leclerc, a little bit higher up the field for the race. But I guess we can sort of get into the race. And talking about Leclerc, if I was going to ask you who was your driver of today, then I'm sort of guessing that you would also go with Charles.
Yes, I definitely went with Mr. Leclerc, or the older Leclerc, that we've seen this weekend. He, I think, gave it his all this weekend. Not to put Sainz down, Sainz drove outstandingly this race. But I think coming from P19 to P3, it's quite an achievement.
Yeah, definitely. I do think it's also worth mentioning, indeed, that Sainz had a very good race, and again, was probably deciding on tactics behind the wheel for himself, and did a good job at that. Of course, tried to undercut Norris at some point, but that didn't work. I guess the McLaren, or McLaren's plural, because of course, with what happened to Piastri, that sort of undid his race, I guess. We'll talk about lap one in a bit, but the McLarens were just sort of unbeatable, which was surprising to me because, of course, leaving Qatar, a lot of us thought that the Abu Dhabi with a lot more, you know, slower corners would be a track that Ferrari would perform well on. But the McLaren seems to be very, very all round, which is interesting thinking about next season. And where they will be, but yeah. Well, I mentioned lap one there, and I think that's there were a couple of things that happened, and I think the most noteworthy to talk about is that coming together of Verstappen and Piastri. So, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I think looking back at the overhead shots of the start, Norris obviously got away really, really well, and so did Verstappen. Just behind Piastri. I don't think Piastri had a bad start, but definitely worse off than what Verstappen did. Verstappen was on the pedal as lights went out. Piastri had a bit of a slower reflex on the throttle. But yeah, I think we know that Max takes the inside racing line for most of his on-track attacks. So I think it was an incident of, from what I could tell, a first corner incident on race start. I do think that Max could have possibly left Piastri a little bit more space on the outside of that corner and turn. But I do think Piastri knew, with Verstappen right behind him and Sainz also right on his tail, that he was going to have to work pretty hard to actually keep his P2 position. And as we saw on that contact, Sainz did make his way through the plumes of smoke that Verstappen and Piastri left as they bumped each other into opposite directions.
Right, I think from the initial reaction of Verstappen, I don't know initial reaction, but there was one radio message where he said that it was unlucky. And
yeah,
I think that's as far as Verstappen will go to blame himself for the coming together, because it was blatantly obvious that it was his fault. And you know, even 10 seconds, I understand that that's what you're gonna give as a penalty for that. But yeah, he was close to undoing McLaren's championship battle, and I guess McLaren must be very. Yeah, they must feel very blessed with Norris actually performing quite well under pressure, even though pressure is relative, because for most of the race, Sainz was about 7 seconds behind Norris, so it wasn't pressure with a driver right behind you, but Norris performed very well. He brought it home, didn't really set a foot wrong at the pedal. I think at some point, I thought we saw Piastri going off. I think he was behind one. He was probably, that was behind Albon when he had a little snap. We just moved into that picture of the McLaren and we saw the snap. Or I don't know, maybe we were already watching that. I was watching with a few people, so my attention wasn't always 100% with the race. But I thought it was Norris. And I thought that there the championship would have come undone, because it would have been very, very interesting if there would have been a Ferrari 1-3 and a McLaren P2, because that would have meant that McLaren would have been able to still take the championship if they would have gotten fastest lap. But Piastri finishing 10th didn't have the time to make an additional pit stop to set that fastest lap. So it could have become very, very interesting, but it didn't. And that's mainly due to Norris actually performing very well in this weekend, I would say. I think credit where credit is due. We've seen him crack under pressure as well here and there during the season. And I would still be one of the ones to say that when it really comes to winning a driver championship, I still have my doubt whether Norris has what it takes. But I guess we'll see we'll see more about that in 2025, which I can't wait to see. But before we go to 2025, there's still a couple of other things to discuss. Let's go back to that first lap again. And I guess it's safe to say that Perez was also one of the unlucky ones there. Basically being touched by... was it Bottas? I think it was Bottas who went bowling again like twice this race because it's somewhat of a Sochi 2021. Okay, my memory's starting to fade. But anyway, yeah, Bottas. He got a 10-second penalty for that. I think in the end he took off Perez and as a result Perez DNF'd, and that was a shame. Because, you know, we finally had Perez qualify in the top 10 again. And I guess he was ready to show what he could. But his ranks came undone very quickly. And, yeah, the same was true for Colapinto, who was hit by Piastri right after Piastri had spun by the hit of Verstappen. And he would later, sort of look like he just was braking far too late and hit the back of Colapinto. And, Colapinto DNF'd. Piastri got a 10-second penalty. And then a little bit later on in the race, Bottas went right into Magnussen by locking up and hitting them quite... he undid Magnussen's race, more or less. I mean, Magnussen finished far at the back, which was interesting because he would later take fastest lap. He would pit already on 29 or 32.
Yeah, it was around about there.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking back into the Pirelli report right now. And so Magnussen, he started on mediums. He went on to hards on lap 12. Then on lap 29, he pitted to go on to other hards. Then he had the crash with Bottas. And then on lap right after that, he went into the pits. Obviously, Bottas had a puncture, but Magnussen also had to go into the pits. I suppose he also changed his front wing. But he went on to softs. And at that point, I was sort of speculating with the people that I was watching with what reason was there to go onto softs. Did they not have any other tires left? Did he want to set the fastest lap already that early on, which is too early because there's just too much gasoline, I guess, in the car. It makes it too heavy. Of course, I was thinking about Gasly just driving up there in the top 10 and potentially taking the fastest lap. So Magnussen already wanted to defend that. Magnussen did end up getting the fastest lap, but I think he only got it after he would pit again on lap 55 and put on another set of soft tires. So Magnussen was actually the only driver on soft tires today, and he used two sets and did set the fastest lap. Obviously didn't get a point for that because he finished outside of the top 10, but he drove 25 laps on one set of soft tires. I thought that was quite a lot, he didn't end up getting any points.
He was probably just pushing to keep that fastest lap point out of play for whatever reason. Haas saw fit to do that. I mean, we did see Hülkenberg finish 8th, which was awesome. The two soft pit stops, it was also in the moment a little bit confusing for me. As I mentioned on my kind of written summaries and my short audios that I've been sending on the chat group, the softs weren't preferable for this race, so it was quite interesting to see that they went with that choice. And like you say, at that point in time, we didn't know if those were the only tires they had left or what was going on in the Haas garage. So I mean, he made it work. He did technically get the fastest lap, even though he didn't get the point for it. His name is still written down on record as Pirelli's fastest lap for DHL.
Yeah, that's worth something. Actually, with that Bottas and Magnussen collision, I guess Verstappen and Hamilton... No, sorry, only Hamilton had not pitted. Verstappen did pit.
Yeah.
Just a lap before that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So I guess Hamilton was hoping for that safety car that didn't come. That would have done a lot to his race. I guess if... Okay, ifs and buts. But I guess he would have been able to perhaps even finish third if a safety car would have come and he would have been able to basically take off 10 seconds from that pit stop. But I'm going to have to go to the final. Let's see how much time there was between Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. Yeah, there was only... There was 4.5 seconds in between. So he might have been able to take a P3 on his last race for Mercedes. What did you make of that final lap of Hamilton, which actually, interestingly enough, because of finishing the race, because of Norris going past the finish straight, we weren't able to see that overtake of Hamilton on Russell, which I guess I'm going to go back to and watch from the onboard, because I want to actually see that. I think it's very interesting to see that Hamilton finished where he did ahead of Russell, who obviously qualified far ahead of him. And I think it's very similar to what we saw in Las Vegas, where we had Russell winning the race, of course, but Hamilton starting P10 and making up a lot of ground and finishing in second, where they would finish one and two, but would start the race at such far apart positions. I think it was the same today, and actually Hamilton was even overtaking Russell in that last lap. So very good performance from him. Could have been a P3 if he was more lucky. And I guess somewhat of a nice goodbye to the team. Obviously not with the greatest qualifying session. I think Toto Wolff said enough about that. But still a very nice race, and something nice to look back at as a race, and of course a great time to look back at. He's been at that team for 10 years, so I guess it's even hard to really describe what feelings would go through his head.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. I would have loved to have seen on live coverage how that overtake between Hamilton and Russell went. We did see him gaining on Russell just before the overtake actually happened. But I think the diehard Lewis Hamilton fans wanted to see that moment. I think Russell conceded the position, I don't think so. But obviously knowing that it was Hamilton's last race, we never know what was spoken about as the final strategy of, if Lewis is behind you, let him through, and so on and so forth. I do think that if they pitted a little bit earlier, like you said, Hamilton could have actually taken the final podium step in the race, but obviously it just wasn't enough. And who knows, maybe if we actually had one or two more laps, what would have happened? Because I know that towards the end of the race, Charles was struggling a lot on his tires. He came on the radio quite a few times saying, what's the strategy, what's the plan, how are we doing this? And when I sat there, I was like, maybe it's time for a pit stop. You did pit quite early in the first pit window. I think he pitted on lap 22 or 23, around about there. And his tires were obviously finished. They'd seen their lifespan. Carlos also was heard once or twice saying, what are we going to do? What's happening? But he obviously managed to hold position in P2. But we did, towards the end of the race, obviously see him drop back a little bit more than what the Tifosi would have liked to see from Lando Norris. But nonetheless, he still held position. And being his last final hurrah with Ferrari, it was quite enjoyable, speaking from a personal sense.
Yeah, Leclerc even pitted as early as lap 20. It was great to see him on a podium with Russell and Sonny Hayes. Did you see that?
Yes, that was quite funny. I had a good laugh at that. They were obviously doing a little bit of a film shoot for the upcoming Formula One movie that Lewis Hamilton has actually been part of producing. So I was quite happy.
Yeah, he didn't put himself on the podium there.
Yeah, I mean, he could have given himself the spotlight, but obviously he wants to show that regardless of where he's headed for the next chapter, he's still faithful to the team and is a team player till the end.
Right.
And I think it was awesome to see that...
Or maybe he just didn't want to be seen in Mercedes clothing and wanted to...
Possibly, that's another thing. I mean, now that the year's over...
It's not really good for Ferrari publicity.
Yeah. But it was awesome to also see that the two people on the podium there with him was actually Leclerc and Russell. So the old team and new team almost being part of celebration.
Good point.
It was a good transition, if that makes sense.
What I actually liked a lot in Leclerc's post-race interview with Nico Rosberg is where Rosberg was asking him about having Lewis as a teammate next year, but Leclerc actually took the time and get back to being a teammate together with Carlos Sainz. I thought that was very, very respectful and very, very nice. And I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I think Lewis is one of the greatest, if not the greatest driver of all times. But I do think that Sainz is actually a very good driver for Ferrari. I mean, Sainz is just the kind of driver that behind the wheel knows what he's doing. You know, Leclerc during the race at some point asked to his engineer whether they would be losing the championship if it stayed like this. I'm pretty sure Sainz would be able to do the calculation in his head, you know.
Yeah,
that's
I'm,
the difference
I'm
between the two
sure,
of them.
Yeah.
And
I think with that, Carlos, like we've seen on multiple occasions, when he takes over strategy, he takes over strategy. He doesn't let anyone defer him from what he set out to do for his race. And almost 90% of the time to 100% of the time, he executes it the way that he wants to. And that's very rare to see happen with a driver. But I mean, a driver of his caliber, like you say, should be able to do the calculations in their head of saying, we're only P2, P3, it's not going to happen. And I'm sure talks in the briefing sessions for Abu Dhabi, or at least coming into Abu Dhabi, the calculations were already made of, you guys need to end up in the top spots with maximum points, fastest lap, everything, in order to make this work.
You would say so. That, I mean, they would go over the different scenarios beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be very surprised if they didn't.
Exactly. And I mean, looking into it, I think McLaren probably did the same thing. And they were lucky enough that their pole sitter, Norris, just ran a flawless race today. He followed, I think, what McLaren had told him to do to the T. And that obviously secured what they needed from today. So... I mean, props to them. It was absolutely fantastic to see that sort of racing. And again, seeing the movement of Leclerc through the pack to the top for podium, also absolutely astounding. But I think, I'm not trying to knock Charles in any way. He's a fantastic driver and a really awesome person to look up to in the sporting world. But I think there is still a little bit of growth that might need to happen, especially now with Hamilton coming into the scene of Ferrari for next year, where Charles might be seen as driver number one, but he needs to still face the facts that Lewis Hamilton is a 7-time world champion and has got over 50,000 kilometers to his name in the F1 industry.
Right. So actually with that, I'm going to get to just a new section of the podcast that I'm making up right now, right here on the spot. I'm going to ask you a couple of quick fire questions and you're just going to respond with yes or no or just a single sentence. But I'm going to start with the following. Good debut for Doen, yes or no?
Yes.
All right. Lawson or Tsunoda, who should get Perez's seat?
From personal opinion, I think due to the fact that
last episode,
but I think Yuki should be taking that seat. He's shown that he's been fighting since the beginning of the season, or at least from the beginning middle of the season, that he is committed to that seat or looking for that seat. And I think there's still a little bit of development for Lawson to achieve in RB before maybe progressing to the Red Bull seat.
If I recall correctly, you were the one saying Lawson last race, but
I think looking at the review of now, almost reflecting on the entire season a little bit of a week later, Lawson came onto the scene very suddenly in the paddock, and I think it wasn't a bad thing, but I also do think that Daniel Ricciardo, who did leave RB for Lawson to take his place, possibly had a little bit more stability than Lawson has had. So I'm going to switch it up from what I said last time, and I'm going to say Yuki, because Yuki has shown the drive, the competitiveness, and once again, that stability of he's been around for longer. He knows a little bit more about what is needed or what is wanted from Red Bull, possibly.
Yeah, and he's also outqualified, Yuki has outqualified Lawson at every race this season.
Correct.
So I think that speaks to itself as well. But we're kind of defying already the concept of this new section with the quick fire questions. So you're going to be quicker with this one.
Yeah.
Colapinto, are we going to miss him? Is it a shame that he's not on the grid next year?
I'm going to say for time being, no.
All right, interesting take. Okay, Sainz or Albon, who's gonna score more points next year in Williams?
Sainz.
All right, and I'm getting down to the final one, the more important one. Who's going to score more points in Ferrari next year, Leclerc or Hamilton?
Jeez, you really know how to put me on the spot here, Anton.
That's the whole point of it.
I'm going to say, because I'm a diehard Tifosi and Charles is, or has been, part of that family for quite a while now, Charles.
All right. Yeah, I'm actually with you on that. I think that Leclerc's just, I think he's going to be outqualifying Hamilton by quite a bit, which is going to demotivate Hamilton. But I gotta say, if I see him during races like Las Vegas and this one this weekend again, I mean, he has a lot of race pace, and he is gonna definitely challenge Leclerc in a different way than Sainz. Although in a certain way they're also similar drivers, I find Sainz also a pretty clean driver. Hamilton's a very clean driver. It's gonna be super interesting, but I guess.
I think that Charles has also had a little bit more time to gel with the team, know the dynamics, and grow through that from the get-go, where Hamilton's now stepping into new territory, even though he's been on the scene for 10, 11 years with Mercedes. Understanding the dynamic of a team in order for it to work well together is a do or die, I think, in this sort of sport. Because if your team dynamic doesn't work, your pit stops don't work, and then that barrels onto your actual race result and. So, I'm going to stick with my answer of Charles being the one to score more points for Ferrari. And, I'm hoping to see some good on-track action between Hamilton and Leclerc, because I definitely think that they will challenge each other in different ways than what Sainz and Leclerc have been challenging each other.
So that means we get to the section where we talk about forecast F1 scores. And of course, it's going to be an interesting one because it's the end of the season. So there's a lot to talk about. But before that, I would like to ask you, how many people do you think got a correct podium prediction? And just before that, I'm going to tell you that we had 1,027 people playing the game this weekend. So how many people went with that podium of
Norris, Sainz, and Leclerc?
And Leclerc, ooh, exactly.
I think I'm going to go roughly around about 265 people.
This is an interesting one, because I think this is what happened the last few times when you were guessing on the podcast as well. You went far over the number.
Yeah.
It happened again. I'm sorry to tell you.
Oh, well.
there was four people
wow,
who had a correct podium with those people in that exact order. So,
well,
yeah.
Well done to you guys.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's. I mean, we'll get to ours in a bit, because that's also going to be interesting. And, well, actually, there's not too much to laugh about, Savannah. We both did pretty well. So I think it's safe to say that
well,
we can be proud this weekend. Yeah. But, okay, let's start with P3. So we had somebody from Serbia on P3, Simon Pupavac, with 79 points. And it's interesting, because P1 and P2, we had a Lebanese 1-2. So we had a, if I'm not mistaken, two races ago, we had a 1-2 from the Philippines. We have a 1-2 from Lebanon this time. On
well
P2,
done.
We have Charbel Basile. He scored 79.5 points. And on P1, we have Omar Ghanoum, and he scored 80 points. So there's half a point between P1 and P2, and half a point between P2 and P3. And with that, of course, the DRS lane voucher of $10 is also going to go to Omar. Charbel was very close with that
well
P2,
done.
But well done indeed. And actually, looking at all the high scores, it's interesting, because most of our high scores in the game have been scored in the beginning of the season, where it was slightly easier to predict everything, and a lot of people went with Verstappen wins. And in those races that he did win, we got a lot of high points finishes. So it's been tough to get in that high score overview. But P1 and P2 both made it into the continental high scores in the Middle East. So for Omar, that's a P18, a shared P18 to be exact, and for Charbel, that's a P20. So
well done.
Two people making it into the high scores. Yeah, well done indeed. But I guess most of you are listening to hear about what happened there at the podium. Just before the race, actually before the qualifying, I posted a little overview with those players that were in positions 1 up until 10 and what they predicted and what the gap was to P1. So I guess it was an interesting one, because Rosario was leading Joseph with 10.3 points ahead of this weekend. And that was a decent lead that he has been having since, if I'm not mistaken, since Canada. Rosario has been on P1. So
more or less.
That's been super impressive. Rosario, well, he actually told me that he was doubting for a long while to go between a Norris win or a Verstappen win, but he ended up going with a Verstappen win and Norris on P2, Piastri on P3, and scoring 32.4 points. And that gives him a total point tally of 1,127.5. Joseph on P2, Joseph Morgan from the UK, he went with Norris, Piastri, Sainz. So, of course, getting P1 right, but also getting Sainz pretty close to his actual finishing position, he scored 48.8 points. So that means that's more than 10.3 points over the score of Rosario. Goes to a total of 1,133.6. So that means that with a 6-point lead, 6.1 actually, Joseph takes the final win of the season.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see the final comeback from the runner-up.
Yeah, quite impressive, I gotta say. And I was, you know, ahead of this race, I was really thinking that Rosario deserves the win, and in a way he does. But on the other hand, I guess you agree with me that the person that takes the highest amount of points in the end of the season is the one that deserves the win. So, Joseph, very deserved, and congratulations.
Yeah, well done. I think this season's been, correct me if I'm wrong, but the most entertaining season that we've had in a while in F1. So yeah, I think with people's predictions this year, it was pretty interesting to see the change from suddenly everyone saying Verstappen on P1, and then it became Norris, and then it became Leclerc, and then we had a bit of a switch up between those three for quite a while, and then Mercedes came into the mix. So yeah, again, well done.
Well done, yeah. I think that's the right description. After a while, we just didn't know anymore who to put on P1.
And, Perez was always P8, though.
true. I actually had him on P8 again this weekend.
I think I had him at P10.
Well, that's closer to where he finished than where I had him. But, just to close off the competition. So, Samantha, you were on P3. Just before start of this weekend. And the question was going to be whether you would remain on the podium, yes or not. And I'm happy to say that you did indeed. Actually, woo-hoo! You came very close even to finishing second. So, Sam, you went with Verstappen, Norris, Leclerc. You got 45.3 points. And you get to 1126.8 points, so very good score within a point score of the P2 position. So that's only 0.7 points off. I'm very impressed, and I'm gonna have to look at that number three race number for you next year for a whole season. So but that's you did it all on your own.
Well done, Sam. I think from the girls group side, you've guided a lot of us through what is actually our first season forecast, myself included. So again, thank you. I think on behalf of all the girls on that chat group on WhatsApp, we really enjoy being part of the community that Forecast has actually built, and especially there being a woman representative on the podium. It's not only a man's sport anymore, and we suddenly are going to strive for P2 and P1 next year. So girls, start doing background research, and let's show these guys what we are made of.
Well, technically speaking, the first season in Forecast F1 was won by a woman. So it's now been two seasons, won by a man and won by a woman. But in the end, I would say that's not really the most important thing, but it's good to hear that so many people are enjoying it and having fun, regardless of who you are, where you're from. I think it's fun to have this competition. And actually, you were just saying now, for people joining only for this year, actually I think it's nice to also mention, we were talking about it a little bit in the chat group, who was the best rookie, so the highest finishing rookie this year. And I think that's a fair prize to hand out.
Yes.
So this year's highest finishing rookie was Levon Pamukyan from Armenia, finishing on P7. Definitely. Actually, that brings us to the rest of the people in the top 20, and Savannah, ahead of this race, you were one of them. You were on P20, to be exact. So let's review a little bit what we predicted. And I usually ask people, what did you put on your podium for this race?
So my podium for this race was Norris, Leclerc, Piastri. So I got a 2 out of 3, but Sainz was followed very closely behind in fourth place on my predictions list.
Yes, so you scored a decent point tally. You had 51.5 points, and that put you on P158 this weekend.
Yeah, I wasn't too upset with that, I must say. I think looking at the all-rounder points of this week, quite a few people decided that they wanted their points before the season's end. So well done to everybody that jumped ahead of me, but I'm happy where I landed up.
Yeah, you were speculating already a little bit on where you would finish in the final ranking.
Yeah,
I guess you were doing some math there and trying to figure out where everybody around you would end up. You were pretty close to getting it right, but you just slightly. I think you missed a couple of people, perhaps, that were behind you who still overtook.
Possibly.
Anyway,
yeah,
you end up in P16. So I would say that's still very, very good.
Yeah. No, I mean, my goal for this year, specifically when I started the predictions, I told myself, let's aim for top 20, and in second year we can try for top 10.
I think that's a very decent goal to have. You accomplished the first, so I'm going to wait and see what happens for the second. But yeah. My prediction this weekend was a Norris Sainz Piastri podium. So, of course, Piastri did make it to the podium, but Norris Sainz was correct. So I scored 60.8 points. And I was P53 this weekend, which means actually I was ahead of the weekend, I was P33. I managed finishing in P22. So just outside the top 20, which I would have liked to enter, just like you, Savannah, and Sam did. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be. On the other hand, that leaves more room for me to improve next year, I guess.
At least you finished higher than what you did last year. So
yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I finished 52nd last year. And yeah, so I easily cut that in half. I'm looking forward to see if I can top that next year. Although I guess next year is going to be a very difficult one, especially with more and more people playing. And and the race is just becoming more and more difficult. So all the more kudos to those that that finish so high. Look, I'm going to ask you, because I usually ask Sam, how many people you think predicted from each country. So from which country do you think we had the most players this weekend?
I think as a safe option, I'm going to say Kenya.
Yeah, that is indeed pretty safe. We had 61 players from Kenya, yeah. And awesome. Actually, we recently had Lebanon and Argentina on P2 and P3. Actually, a new P2 this weekend, we had 50 players from India. And Argentina is still on P3 with 49 players. I think I sort of skipped up on asking you last time how many people you think predicted from South Africa.
Yeah, I think we ended up with about 17 last weekend, so I'm gonna be optimistic and say 18 due to the fact that it was the season finale from South Africa.
Right, well, it was 17.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think I'm actually now I'm trying to look back whether it was indeed, I thought it was 18 last time, but
maybe I've got my numbers mixed up.
Yeah, I might be wrong. Anyway, well, I'll check that another time. Oh, yeah, actually, it was 18 last time.
Okay.
18, and we went to... No, sorry, I'm wrong, sorry. Again, I'm messing up. So it was it was 18 the weekend before that. It was 17 in Qatar, and again, 17 for this weekend. Anyway,
all right.
Semantics. But, that means we can also make up our final finishing positions for all of the points scored for all of the countries accumulated. And our final top three this year is going to be Argentina on one, and the Netherlands on two, and Spain on three. And there was 43,800 points scored in total by Argentinian players. The Netherlands was on 40,000.4, and Spain on 35.9. So,
Well done to all the people representing those countries.
Yeah, I'm just trying to go back to previous years. So in 23, we also had a P1 spot for Argentina, a P2 spot for the Netherlands. But at that time, it was Lebanon that was on P3. Lebanon, ahead of this weekend, was actually in P5, but they do overtake Italy in this last race for P4. So that's Lebanon in P4, Italy in P5. Kenya entering the top 10 newly this year at P6. We have Mexico entering the top 10 as well this year at P7. Then at 8, we have the UK. At 9, we have India. And at 10, we have the USA. So that finishes off our top 10. We actually, in this last race, had Zambia also overtake Greece for P15. And Colombia just makes it into P25, going up two places, overtaking both Australia and Serbia. And the most amount of places gained this weekend for a country was Ghana, moving up six places into P103. And that's where they finally sit. And of course, I will share some of the overviews of other countries' scores on the Instagram. So continue to follow that. Before we also go to the quiz, Savannah, I would like to ask you a couple of questions. How many people do you think predicted, like how many unique players did we have this season in Forecast F1? I don't know if you have any idea, but I'll give it to you that last year it was 1,531 players.
Sure. I mean, that's already a large number. I think overall, I think I would love to say that we're close to hitting about 1,800, going on 2,000 possibly. I might be a little bit optimistic.
No, we actually crossed that. But the thing is that there's a lot of people who start playing and then don't come back. So, you know, there's a lot of players that play just a single weekend. But in total, we had 2,824 unique players.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a lot. And I'm just checking now. We had players from 147 different countries. So that's also quite impressive. And I have another question for you, but this one's a tough one. How many points were scored in total in the whole game during the whole season? So how many points did these 2,824 people collect all together if we add everything up?
Oh my soul. I'm going to say 573,000 points.
Okay, well, that's not too bad. You're a little bit off, but I would still say that's actually a pretty decent guess. It was 916,155.1.
Come on, guys, we need to hit a million next year.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say. I think I don't want to be too optimistic, but I think we're easily going to hit that million next year.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to. So
I think after the season as well, seeing the chaos that ensued in F1, I'm hoping the community for Forecast at least grows substantially.
Exactly. I hope to say the same thing. And with that, I think we come to the quiz, and I'm happy to introduce that you actually are going to play against another player. So, if you could please introduce your sister, Savannah.
Sure. So my sister is not part of the Forecast predictions yet. However, she is going to be joining us from next year on the Forecast predictions. So have a look out for, instead of Leclerc, or Leclerc and Lel, for S Versace and N Versace, I'm happy to welcome Natalia to the podcast. How's it?
Yeah, I think for most of the listeners, you might have a bit of trouble telling them apart. I don't know if anyone saw the post-practice interview of Arthur Leclerc, but I was surprised like how similar not only his voice but also his English accent was as that to Charles. I wouldn't be able to tell the two apart hardly if I wouldn't see them on camera. So we're going to see how this is going to go. Savannah, I suppose you will be the one to go first. And for those who don't always listen to the podcast, I'm just going to explain. So the two of you are going to guess how many people correctly predicted each finishing position. So that means we're going to start with P1 Norris. And as already mentioned, we had 1,027 people playing the game. So the question is, Savannah, how many people got that right? And just as a heads up, as a as a prize, the winner gets to hear his national anthem. But I guess we can guess which one's that going to be this this weekend. And
I wonder which one that would be.
The South African national anthem already for three times in a row. So it's an interesting one. But anyway, well, I guess people are getting, you know, ready to practice it. I think they're been hearing it more often than the Canadian one that we used to always hear for Sam. But anyway, there we go. Norris, P1, Savannah.
Okay, so 1,027 people in total for the weekend. I'm going to say, after the performance of McLaren this weekend, that 465 people chose.
I was also going to guess around there. I was going to say 473.
All right, you're both pretty close. It was indeed in the 400s, but slightly lower. It was 402 people that went with the Norse win. So that's the first point for Savannah. So Natalia, how many people do you think correctly predicted signs on P2?
I would say 499, round about there.
And I think I'm going to go a little bit lower and say 422.
All right, so it was indeed slightly lower, but actually quite a bit lower than that, both of those numbers. It was 173 people that went with Signs on P2.
Whoa. Didn't realize
yeah,
it was
that
so
does
low.
Mean you got another point, Savannah, because that 422 is still closer. Cool. And then how many people put Leclerc on P3? Of course, knowing ahead of the weekend that he would get those grid drops, well, not ahead of the weekend, but ahead of predicting. So, yeah, Savannah, that one's for you.
I think, and this is going to break my heart if I don't get this point. I'm going to go with 115 people.
I was going to say 126.
Okay, that's actually approaching the right answer. That's only six away from the right answer because it was 132 people. So that's the first point for Natalia. And that means we go to the first finishing Mercedes on P4.
I want to say 212.
And I think I'm going to take the lower option and go 74.
All right, 74 is slightly closer. It was 113, so somewhat in the middle, but that's a point for you, Savannah. And that brings us to the second finishing Mercedes with Russell, Savannah.
Sure. I'm also going to stick to a bit of a lower number and say, let's go safe and say 63.
I think I'm also going to lower my answer a bit, but I want to say 109.
All right, that's your second point. It was quite high, 213 people. So the 109 is close to the right answer. It's 3-2, meaning we move to Verstappen in the Red Bull at P6.
Sure, for Verstappen, I think a lot of people will probably
want him
to be a little bit higher.
I think
higher
that's
up.
You, Savannah, but I think it's Natalia who has to go first. If I'm not... Where am I?
Sorry, yes.
Yeah. See, I did manage to pick your voices apart.
Well done, Anton. Many people struggle.
Yeah, a lot of people struggle. I think I'm going to say 167.
And I think then I'll make my choice 131.
All right. It was quite a bit lower, I guess. Most people had Verstappen a little bit higher up in the ranking, so there was 53 people that went with him on P6. So, well, that means another point for Savannah, and that means we go to another Alpine. And I doubt we've really talked about it enough during our race review, but what a result again for Gasly. I mean, he's been having a wonderful set of results recently.
Yeah, the last few races have definitely brought a lot of his action to the track. But I think I'm going to go with 48 people choosing him in that position.
I was going to say 48, but to be different, you know. I think I'm going to say 51.
Okay, this is a really, really nice one. The 48 was going to be very hard to beat because it's only two away from the right answer. The right answer is 50, but that means 51's closer. So actually, that's your point.
Well done. Nice. There was somewhat of a same wavelength on the sister scale.
Definitely. Well, let's see if you can get as close to the right answer for Nico Hülkenberg on P8, Natalia.
I don't really know. I want to say 65.
And I'm going to go low in saying 15.
Well, that means score is now 4-4 because it was actually, I don't want to say extremely, but let's say relatively high. 179 people at Hülkenberg on PA.
Wow.
So really quite a lot. Means the 65 is closer. Again, 4-4. There's only three questions left because we're going to go to P9, P10 and fastest lap. So how many people had Alonso on P9, Savannah?
I'm going to say 87.
Can our brains just stop sharing the same brain cell, please? because you keep saying the things I want to say. Okay, in this instance, I guess I'll say 92.
Well, you keep on making good decisions when you have the same wavelength, because it's indeed higher. It's actually still quite a bit higher. It's above 100. It's 132. So that means you just overtook Savannah with 4-5. Two questions left. Piastri on P10.
I want to say 113.
And I'm going to go on the opposite side of that scale and say 10 people.
Yeah, there the experience starts kicking in, I guess. It was indeed, there was a lot of people who thought that Piastri would finish much higher up. So it was only 7 people. Yeah. So you're 3 away from the right answer. So 7 people with a Piastri P10. That means it's 5-5. That means that Magnussen, even though not scoring any points, is going to be the decider on the quiz. So how many people, Savannah, do you think had a fastest lap for Kevin Magnussen?
I'm going to say 1.
I'm going to say 11.
All right. Well, it was 3 people, to be exact. So that means that Savannah wins it. Very slightly.
Woohoo! Thanks with your victory dance over here.
Oh, you're gonna, well,
my third win for being on the podcast for third time.
If you do a dance, we could, if your sister could film it, we can perhaps put it up on.
Oh, no.
I'd be more than happy to do that.
Not a chance. I did 7 years of professional dancing, but not this time around.
Well, I mean, you're building up to it then. But all right, well, we'll skip the dancing. I will mention, actually, because only 3 people getting that right, I will mention who those people were, even though, of course, yeah, since the driver doesn't score the point, those that predicted him also don't score a point. And actually, next year, we're not going to have a fastest lap to predict. I'm not too sad about it, because I think the point is pretty arbitrary. I would love to see a point awarded for pole position, for example. But what I am going to miss is just that little bonus question in the forecast F1 picks. But Pietro Tempesti from Italy.
Maybe we can change it to, in the predictions, you have to predict who's going to be on pole. Might have just switched.
We can add that, but yeah, since the concept is that you can score the points that the drivers score, and since there's no point for it, you can. But maybe just for fun, or that's why we have chat groups, so you can talk about it there. But those that had Magnussen on fastest lap were Pietro Tempesti from Italy, Anthony Pirone from Finland, and Finley Tomlinson from the UK. So, good effort.
Nice guys.
Unfortunately, no points. But, with that, we end a episode that is, the last episode of this season. But, not without looking forward a little bit to the 2025. And since your sister joined the podcast now, I think it's a good occasion to ask somebody that's not playing forecast, what do you think about playing forecast, and are you going to beat Savannah next year? I guess that's the real question.
Thanks for putting me on the spot here, but I'm very competitive. If you ask Savannah, she will tell you.
I have the bruises to prove it, people.
I'm not that bad, okay? But I'm very competitive, so I will try. But I'm also, because she's now done it for your first year.
Yeah.
This year, her first year this year, I'll obviously ask her a few questions here and there. But I will definitely try.
So, yeah, I won't try and hide it. Natalia did help me once or twice in my own predictions this year. I sat there sometimes going, Verstappen, Norris, Leclerc, Perez. Who the hell must I choose? And she goes, just put Verstappen.
That was towards the beginning of the year, just to clarify.
Okay, and it never served me wrong. That means your P16 is actually a shared P16 somewhat.
Sort of, yeah.
You can hold off on the victory dance.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I think that's going to be one of the main fun additions for next year, is that in the app you'll be able to add a a group listing. So everyone will be able to create a group in the app, and you can send a code to your friends and they can join a group, and you'll be able, within the app, you'll be able to see how everyone scores. And you can also, you can create, you can be part of multiple groups at the same time. So that's going to be something very interesting and a good way for others to, you know, share the game with other people, with friends, family, whomever, and compete for those of you that are competitive.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, and I mean, in the end, that's, you know, that's the for me, that's also the fun of it, comparing my scores to other people. If I would just be playing in a vacuum, it wouldn't be as interesting as it is when you have other people that you know that are playing, compare your scores. And yeah, I guess what we've seen towards the later phase of this season, you know, the build-up of who are you going to put on P1? And I guess that next year is going to be, hopefully, as big of a question as it was towards the latter stage of this year.
Absolutely, I completely agree with you there, Anton. I mean, I know I've got one or two other people that I've told about forecasts, and they said that they will look into joining next year. So there might be one or two people from my side that are already looking to join, and obviously they'll formalize it with you in the early stages of next year, my sister being one of them. So yeah, it'll be awesome to be able to see in those smaller groups where everybody's landing up in terms of the close-knit competitivity, or competitiveness, apologies, I cannot speak. It's been a long year, guys.
It has been.
Yeah, the competitiveness of the smaller, more intimate groups that people know firsthand, as well as playing on an international level, I think is going to be a lot of fun.
No, it is going to be a lot of fun. And I'd like to thank you and both of you to come on the podcast for this episode. And I guess there's going to be a little bit of a wait towards next season, but I'm sure Samantha and I are going to also do a pre-season podcast episode just to look ahead of the 2025 season. And well, for now, I guess, enjoy the holidays. Don't enjoy them too much, because well, there's a season to be watched and to be enjoyed, and hopefully it's going to be as exciting as this season was. I guess you already summarized it, but in the end it turned out to be much more interesting than it looked to be at the beginning of the season, where we thought that Red Bull was going to be as dominant as last year. But let's hope that let's really hope that all the teams are going to be very competitive, very close to one another.
Yeah, no, I think we're in for a bit of a joyride next year. So strap into the seatbelts, focus on the steering wheel in front of you, and let's dive into the next season of 2025 together.
Well, I guess that leaves us with nothing else than to listen to the South African anthem.
Yeah, thank you, Anton. I've had a wonderful year in Forecast as my first year. So I think on behalf of everybody in Forecast, for all that you do, for all that Samantha does, for anybody else that helps you behind scenes, thank you, thank you, thank you. This community is absolutely awesome to be part of, and we will help you continue to grow it going forward. And also, stay safe to everybody out there with the festivities, like Anton said, but enjoy yourself, be with family, and surround yourself with love and positivity. Thanks, guys.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from South Africa as well.